The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Cole Hammack and Tony Payne. I'm really excited about this topic today because I'm kind of in this age bracket and conversations have happened in my house pertaining to what we're getting into. And I can't ask you this. You're too young, but you're just getting started. But I can remember, you know, when we had a big dream of a home and a yard and a short commute to work and all the things that you kind of go through.
You're not too young to have those dreams too, Tracy.
Well, I don't dream.
Those are still alive.
All right. Well, you're just starting now, so maybe put it a little differently. So, but now, you know, when you're sort of at my age, it's maybe less about the lawn and, you know, more about the walk-in shower. You know,
that's real though.
I know where we're going now.
You know what I mean? The potential for, you know, handles on the walls and things like that.
Yeah.
Right? That's where your brain goes. So today we're talking about turning the key on those decisions and what a home really means and looks like in retirement. So getting right into it, and the topic for today is Homebound for Retirement, Turning the Key on Retirement Housing Decisions. Which, as I've researched this, can really get into the weeds, and it can be a little overwhelming. So hopefully we'll be able to give people some good tips. And this is a personal question too, is there a sweet spot to start to plan your retirement move? Because I know in my house, I get accused of being a hoarder, and I constantly am told to, you know,
is it rightly so?
It's not. Clarifying. I'm sentimental. If you made me a rock with a smiley face on it 10 years ago, I probably still have it.
That's cute.
But
Do your kids want that rock?
They can throw it at the window for all I care. I mean, there's some therapy in that, I think, at the end of the game. But no, I'm not a hoarder, but...
Yeah, no, I think
there's a lot of stuff.
Within your question, though, of when's that sweet spot, I mean, yes, we get it. Everybody's different phases of life, all that jazz. But the idea of I'm in that span right before I'm going to be done working. I'm going to have all my time back. Every day's vacation again. Maybe the kids are out of the house and my spouse and I are finally dating each other again. You know, all of that where I've been working, living. The house has just been a roof over my head while I go home and go back to work again. Yeah, that's really important. So the sweet spot of before I retire, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's 10 years, but it's got to be before you retire so that you start planning, okay, what am I going to do? What's the move? And then you start making decisions along the way that are a little different too. Do I update the windows? Do I do the new driveway?
Right.
Do I get this? But if you're not thinking ahead of time, all of a sudden retirement happens. You start looking around and like you said, mentioned, maybe all that clutter, all the stuff, the lifetime of memories. That's the polite way of saying it.
Right.
You know, a lifetime of memories is collected. And what do you do with it?
So. Yeah, I mean, my husband is in the home building industry and builds some pretty large homes. And I'm always amazed at the age bracket, you know, building a $2 million home in your late 60s, early 70s. First of all, the stress level for me personally would be kind of take me over the top. But I always thought that was kind of interesting because these people are in retirement. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is it more of a purpose, a hobby, a reason to... You know, be busy and active. I don't know, but
you remember the ancient
Egyptians? Feel like
Egyptians.
It's happening a lot.
I can't help but go there. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, but I'll go there.
Do I remember the ancient Egyptians?
Yeah, well, I didn't mean it like that, Tracy.
I recall meeting
them. Yeah, whoa, I didn't mean it like that. But
this is one of those podcasts.
I really dug myself in here.
You do better.
Thank you. But back to the Egyptians, where I was going with this, pyramids and stuff, artifacts. you're getting entombed with all your stuff almost. I mean, at what point is it, it's just too late, I've got all my stuff, I've got all those rocks, all those Easter cards from way back when, you know, my first award from work, all of it. What point do I have all this stuff that maybe I need, maybe I don't, I'm not even there to think about it, but I just need somewhere for all my stuff. Mm-hmm. That's where I think some of those temples to age come from of, you know, it might still be the two of us in the house. The kids have their own families. They're doing their own things. We travel for the holidays. That big dining room just sits still. But the idea of, I got to have somewhere for all my stuff.
I like the term temples to age. That's, I think, really, that's what I'm going to start calling my house. Welcome to my temple, to age.
You guys know my background.
Open that closet.
I've helped a couple elders in my family through their transition as the family financial planner almost. And from the retirement phase to passing away and getting house sold and perhaps assets on others in the next generation. That's where I'm coming from with this too, of, you know, to see that temple of all their stuff and all the old DVDs and VHS tapes at that point, and even some A-tracks and records. Yeah, exactly. All of these things where it's a lifetime of collection. Maybe it's not all valuable, but it might be sentimental. I mean, when you think about a home is the biggest asset for a lot of families, and that's a big driver of your expenses. Well, this is real. This isn't just talking about clutter stuff. This is, if I'm deliberate and I make choices before I retire, maybe I don't have to have that giant property tax bill. Maybe I'm not paying for that homeowner's insurance. Maybe I can go travel and I don't have to worry about leaving the house unattended for a month. These are all the things you set yourself up for doing it right, thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I think the important thing too, because I was thinking the exact same thing, right? Do it before retirement. But a part of that too is you have steady income. Right, you have those expectations where we don't have to rely on making this big change where it's already emotional, and now we have to plan on taking these larger outsized distributions from the portfolio that maybe we didn't think about or plan for properly the first time around. So being able to do that with just expectations while things are normal, give you more time to get acclimated, just makes so much sense.
Well, and Trace, I know you're, well, maybe not living in television, but you like TV, right? You watch a couple shows, is that fair?
Not a whole lot.
I like this lead-in, though.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make a suggestion for you, for our audience. It really pertains to this topic, that temple to age almost idea. If you want to deal with that, I'd highly recommend the show The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning.
Go on.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
It's a unique concept.
Is it a reality show or a documentary?
Yeah, I'd say reality show, but, you know, it's a little bit, it's Peacock, so it's not one of the, I'll say, trashy ones or something. it's more, you know what, here's where you are. You know, different people, different phases of life. Pick ourselves right now, and to go through and to have that approach. And it's Swedish for a reason. We know the Nords are somewhat different in how they think, and there's sometimes a little less emotion about death. So it's the idea of putting yourself in those shoes of, if I wasn't here, what are my heirs going to value? What are the people going to value? If I was thinking like I was dead, what is going to be a value here? What isn't? Mm-hmm. And the idea of, can I get rid of this now? Applying some of that logic to it. And again, there's a lot of emotion. You've seen hoarders, stuff like that. I mean, there can sometimes be a big mental attachment behind the stuff. Mm-hmm. So this seemed like a great broach of having that emotional side, dealing with the human part, but also the practical part of estate planning, size, space. You know, do you really need these things? So it was that idea of death cleaning. You know,
yikes.
And I kind of been there, but, you know, someone's passed away, you're going through the house, you're figuring out what, you know, do we give this to so-and-so? Do we donate this? Does this go in the for sale pile? Mm-hmm. It's that. And when you think about what the maybe stress, maybe time commitment, the emotions for your heirs going through that, if you can do that while you're alive and take advantage of it, maybe that leads to downsizing or, hey, I don't need that extra room or I don't need that bigger basement.
That storage unit that I've been paying for.
Exactly.
For years.
That may lead to, hey, now I've got a little bit more money for myself now or for the family. And that's real.
So you're talking a lot about factors that tip the scale when you're trying to decide whether you want to stay put or start fresh in retirement.
That's where I've seen it start, really. It's not so much, hey, this is the house and value and economics. It's more, where am I going to put all my stuff?
Yeah, mm-hmm. What space do I really need?
So what motivates people, do you think, to choose a smaller space? So is it more about the money aspect, or is it, and I hate the words, it depends, but do you see trends where you can really answer that question?
I think the one that I probably see most would just be the maintenance piece, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if, if you have a big yard, you have to do the landscaping, or historically mm-hmm. you have, or you have to clean out the gutters, whatever it is, just the things that after a certain point you don't want to do
yeah.
or feel comfortable doing. That's probably the one that tips me off the most. I say, okay, well, let's start looking elsewhere. What other considerations should we have?
That would have been my answer. As, yep. as a potential client, if you had asked me that question, that's what I would have said. I'm tired of cutting the grass. Mm-hmm. I'm tired of trying to figure out what colors to put in the yard, the flowers.
I'll sometimes get it twice a year from retirees, too. And, Cole, you might know what two times a year that is. When the property tax bills come.
December and June.
Do you need to live in that school district? Do you need that big of a house? I mean, again, the idea of this is a fixed cost for being here in this mm-hmm. community of this size, sometimes that's the driver of, do we really need this or could we downsize? You know, I hate to say that might be one of the least important reasons, but if you're savvy and you're mindful and, you know, we don't need all this or the area has changed, that's where you can take advantage. And again, we said the sweet spot of 50s beforehand, mm-hmm. before retirement. Well, the contrary is true, too, where I can't help but say it, but I have not seen very many 90-year-olds freely move or willingly move.
Right.
Maybe they're transitioned to a different phase of life or a care facility, but the idea of I'm going to pack up and downsize, mm-hmm. your health may be diminished, your overall capacity is diminished. There's other things more important in the world.
And I've joked with clients, too. I said after a certain point, you just get a little bit more stubborn, too.
Yeah.
Right? You get a little bit more set in your ways, set in your space.
You're right. And when you know how many steps are there at night and which steps creaky and you're mm-hmm. comfortable with that, and maybe you have
amazing.
A health issue.
I mean, I remember my mom was in her late 60s. She had lived in, and might maybe 70s, I might get the math wrong. My dad built the house in 1950. Mm-hmm. And I can remember begging her, because her health was starting to decline, please let me move you closer to me. Let's get a little condo. There was one right across the street. I could not get her to emotionally unravel enough to let me pack up the house and sell it. Yeah. She just could not let go of that 50-year-old home that she had raised her children in, lost her husband, you know, gone through her first divorce, lost her second husband. So much emotion. I would think that that is probably the hurdle.
Definitely.
One, that's a big one.
The emotion as well as, again, the comfort. You know, I know where the grocery store is. I know the trash people. Yeah. I know the mailman. I mean, all of that is real. Mm-hmm. You can't get around that. So, again, the idea of being deliberate early on. And you know what? If this is we built this house, this is where we want to be, this is our forever home, the earlier you and your spouse, if there is one, can acknowledge that and say that, you know, this is plan A, forever home. But still have that plan B for mm-hmm. what if something happened to one of us? Could I cut the grass, maintain the property? Would I want to? Mm-hmm. You know, the more a couple could have that discussion ahead of time, well, then if plan B or C is needed, well, at least you've talked to your spouse when times were good, when you were both alert. You know, the worst case is somebody has a stroke or a bad health issue and they're not themselves. So that surviving spouse has a little bit of guilt, or the healthy spouse of, well, do I sell the house out from under us? Mm-hmm. What do I do? Where do I move them to a facility? Mm-hmm. So again, the awareness of having the discussions ahead of time, it's not a perfect plan, mm-hmm. but it's even knowing what each other's preferences were, it'll allow you to make better decisions earlier on.
And flexibility over freedom is really, you know, was that just sort of a pro and con list that you sit down and make?
I think it's basically the attempt to be opportunistic, I think, about the situation. So the idea is that you're making the decision early when you're in a position that you can do so, right, versus being forced to that point, Tony, what you're kind of talking about, where it's a decision almost made for you. Mm-hmm. So basically creating your own flexibility really goes a long way for those later years.
Yeah, but you're implying selling the house and moving into maybe sort of an extended community where you start with independent living and then you've got the option of assisted living down the road. Well, what about those that want to just kind of contemplate a smaller residence or an apartment?
That's a good point, because the transitional phase or transitional living is one answer, but mm-hmm. even just downsizing to a smaller home or condo or renting somewhere, you know, even that is still being deliberate in, you know what, that may be plan A, and then if I or my spouse have a health issue, maybe we have to transition somewhere else. But that's, I think, part of that. You've got a couple plans, your base plan, and then what if something happens planning.
So I'm going to kind of juke and go into, we talk about investing a lot, you know, as far as, you know, potential estate plans are concerned. So let's give some examples of how a primary residence can serve as both sort of a strategic asset and an emotional anchor in the long-term retirement vision.
It's a neat thing to have a paid-off house.
A big, big house, right? We're talking about a huge, maybe a legacy home, right?
Yeah. No, if you're in retirement, again, there could be different reasons for different situations, but ideally you have your mortgage paid off, you're in your home. You know, if you have one, it's because you're strategic and deliberate. You know why you have one. So that equity in the house, that's tax-free money. So usually that, hey, if I needed to get a wedding paid for, a new vehicle, something like that, I can typically borrow that money and I don't have to take it out of my IRA and pay taxes. It's not a distribution.
So you're talking about an equity or something.
Yeah, exactly, an equity line or a loan, or even maybe a reverse mortgage one day. You know, that gets it to another level of complexity, but the
and
idea
we've done
of,
a show on that conversation,
yeah,
so yeah, people sure. can kind of tune into that.
Yeah, to have the house, and even if it wasn't paid off, but to be deliberate with it and have it as an asset in your plan, there's so much there that you can do and utilize. It really comes down to, what's my goal? Is this the forever home?
So when somebody's selling their home, how do they turn the equity into a powerful financial tool?
I think at that point, it really depends on what we're trying to accomplish, right? So if we're going from just home to home, maybe we're downsizing in space, but we're looking at a comparable purchase price, because that can happen a lot, especially going to a ranch-style home.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially in today's market.
Yeah, especially in today's market. So there's obviously, you can just go one-to-one. You take your cash, you apply it toward the next home. But another opportunity, a way that maybe we can make our dollar stretch a little bit further, would be what Tony had referenced with the reverse mortgage. So a way that we can get into that new home, get a loan that we may never need to pay back for as long as we're living in that home, but still keep money from that original sale to work toward our long-term goals.
And those can be really complex. So we always encourage people to talk to your advisor about that, and maybe an attorney and perhaps an accountant as well.
Right.
But just to continue the thought too, another option just be maybe we want to rent. Maybe that's a scenario that makes sense, whether it's for an interim period or just because we don't want to deal with the maintenance, then being able to leverage the cash from the sale of the home while paying that cash flow piece, but we're able to protect that or invest that or do something with that, you can go a long way that way too.
And this is related. It's not the primary residence, but let's say there was a second home in there, or maybe you had that lake house or that vacation property.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on the same page here. It's a natural transition. And the idea of, you know what, again, I can't help but say it. I'm in my later 80s or 90s. I'm healthy. I might have slowed down some, but I'm not driving up or going to the lake every weekend in the summer. But I bought it in 1970 for a nickel or something, and now it's worth decent money. If I sell it, I'm paying taxes. And if I don't sell it, I'm maintaining it, I'm keeping it, I got this thing I don't use. That's also part of being deliberate earlier on of, is this a family asset? Is this something that stays in the plan? Is there a phase where maybe I start renting it out more and I enjoy it less? You know, being very deliberate though with either a second home, vacation home, that kind of stuff. Again, you just wouldn't want to be later in life holding that boat anchor, having to put money into it, not utilizing it. There's no plan. The kids might fight over it and this, that. No one wants to be able to rent it out. You know, there could be a lot going on there that hamstrings the family. Or you sell it and you end up with a boatload of money, and then all of a sudden you need Medicare or Medicaid or something, and that money's counted against you. So this is where having a deliberate strategy with an attorney, accountant, financial planner, when you're dealing with something like that, can be so valuable.
Is that where we talk about trusts?
It could be.
Yeah.
Is that there's probably more options than just a trust, right? When you're talking about putting, I mean, is it ever smart to put your home in your kid's name as you age?
That's what, you know what, we try not to have definites here. I'm struggling to come up with a scenario where that's a great move.
I know.
Only so because you lose control.
So if I put my home in my kid's name.
Yep.
And I give them the money to pay the taxes every year.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're getting it out of your name, your estate. And part of that, and we get this sometimes, is you're losing control.
Yeah.
And let's say, again, those kids start seeing mom drive a little more wild or something, or they don't like what you picked out for Easter dinner. and mom's losing it. So we're going to sell that house out, and mom, you're going to the home now. You're getting taken care of, and we're going to take that money and maybe go to Hawaii with it or something fun, because that's what mom would have wanted us to do, right? And you're sitting there going, nuh-uh, leave me in my house, guys. Mm-hmm. And that's the downside and the control factor where, yeah, there might be people who propose different Medicare, Medicaid kind of scenarios, but you really have to consider, when I lose control, well, that might be a benefit for some things, but where's the negative in that? And those are big ones.
Mm-hmm. You would know, you say that's probably the worst case scenario of doing that?
No, it could get even worse. They could take out another mortgage, take that money, blow it, and then you're stuck upside down in your residence that you don't own anymore that has debt on it, and they can't maintain it. Yeah, it keeps going worse and worse there. So keeping control over your own assets, while you may need them or want them, that trumps some of that tax planning, Medicare planning, in my opinion. That's where I would come from advising someone. You've really got to think about the downside, not just the financials, but usually when you do that, you give up control.
Yeah.
And I think part of honestly just keeping the home in your name too is tax planning, because the idea being is when you pass, you get that step up in basis, meaning the point at which you bought the home steps up to the market value at your date of death. So when that passes to your kids.
My brain just kind of.
Yeah, go ahead. Cool.
Let's say that in a way that I can understand what that means.
So when it passes to your kids, the idea is if they sell it the same day that you pass, just to paint a picture, there's no change in market value from when you passed, the kids don't pay any taxes then. But if instead you transfer that home to the kids, you're transferring your basis. So if you bought the home for $200,000 and it's now worth $1 million, they're going to recognize that $800,000 as a taxable gain.
Ooh.
When they sell the home, if you transfer it, versus if it's $1 million, you pass, that basis is now $1 million.
So if there's no money in the account to take care of those taxes, that's left to the heirs?
Then they sell the home, and then they split the difference, pay the taxes.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is where, especially with those who have land or larger businesses, the idea of how do you, if you want to keep it whole. Right. If you want to keep it whole, you usually will have an insurance policy, some other assets, set up the estate plan deliberately so that, you know what, I can pay this tax bill, but I can keep the family business or these real estate properties whole without having to liquidate to sell taxes. And again, that's part of the planning ahead, because if you're waiting till your 70s or 80s to do that, most insurance companies are going to charge you through the nose as a 70 or 80-year-old if they'll even give you the insurance.
Right.
But if you thought about it deliberately, planned ahead of time, there might be the ability to have an insurance policy there at a reasonable price.
Yeah, and through the nose, just I was looking at an illustration earlier, so assume mid-70s, a $100,000 whole life policy, because that's what we'd be looking
Male
at.
Male or female?
Male.
Okay.
Yep. It was going to be about a little over $4,000 a year for $100,000 in coverage, which is close to nothing for what we'd want it for. So imagine that at scale, if we need an $800,000 portfolio to cover a tax bill, well, we're probably looking at $30,000 in premiums.
So you have to pay the taxes in the difference between what it was worth when it was purchased or sold or built versus when you're transferring it.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah. Kind of like I was joking about there, that lake house that Grandpa bought for a nickel way back when say, here, have this. Oh, my, that can lead to those taxes Cole's talking about, rather than, you know what, just keep that thing and die with it. And then all of a sudden that tax bill evaporates. And that's the step up in basis idea almost of, you know what, and in the middle, you're stuck maintaining that property, holding it, putting money into it, where if you have a plan and you're deliberate, maybe that tax bill isn't the biggest thing in the world. Maybe there's some other ways to get around, and there are, that if you plan ahead, you can strategize to minimize that without having to wait until you die.
But that would be another show.
Yeah, that's for part two.
That's another show.
Okay, is that true even if the person, in the person's will, it says the house is to be sold and divided two ways or three ways between the kids, but the house is in the name of one of the kids? We're not attorneys.
Yeah. If the house is in the name of a kid, that's not going through your will. That's not your asset anymore.
It's the responsibility of the person whose name it's in.
Yeah.
And at the point of if it's in the will, it involved passing, that's where that step up in basis comes into play of, well, if I bought it for the nickel, it's worth $800,000. When I passed, now my heirs basically bought it at that $800,000. Forget what I paid for it, my nickel way back when. So that's the trade-off of, do you keep it and die with it, or do you use some strategy because, hey, maybe it's in a bad area or the area is declined, or I've got to put in a new deck or seawall or something. Is it really worth that tax bill to just hold it? That's where, if you're being deliberate and working with somebody, looking at your numbers, you find that out. It's worth it or it's not, but there are numbers behind that.
Even if it's in a trust. If the house is in a trust.
Now, if it's in a trust, it may get even more complex because that step up in basis may not apply. It may be at the value it went in of the trust.
Okay.
So that, and just to say it, when you hear phrases of trust, Medicare planning, Medicaid planning, things that sound like a Swiss Army knife, a do-it-all kind of thing, that's where you really have to know the ins and outs of, what am I giving up to get this feature? Because it's like gravity. What goes up must come down. There is no free ride to transfer the property. You're usually giving up something with these different strategies.
Okay. Last question I have for you is future-proofing the housing strategy, and it relates to that. So how do retirees prepare today for the health, mobility, and location needs they might need tomorrow?
I kind of smile and say renting.
Yeah.
You know, you turn in the keys, you find another place. That's the easiest way
so
to be mobile.
It's not just about a ramp and some wall bars.
You know, everyone's different. So the idea of, if you're a renter and you're okay with that, and, you know, I know where my cash is. It's not about having equity in a house, but I have the cash. I can afford this, you know, 3 months at this place, 4 months at this, 6 months at that's okay. That's very mobile. But at the same time, you know what? This is the house. This is our forever home. That's the way we call it. That's when those modifications of, yeah, I'm not going to sell this. This is going to be us. The ramp, maybe an elevator, maybe some other things where, you know, if I'm going to have somebody come in here and stay with me 24/7, where are they going to stay?
Right.
You know, do I have to convert a bedroom for someone else who may be here as a guest, or, you know, I have someone come and visit all the time. Where's the parking spot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like that, that while you're young, healthy, you got that uplift in income Cole mentioned, that's where if you can put a little money into that and decide this will be the forever home, you're getting ahead of it.
Mm-hmm. Great, great information. Thanks so much, guys. That's it for today. Remember, your home is more than a place. It's part of your plan. So make the move before it makes itself, I guess, is the best advice.
Great advice.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to share with your friends, and we'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.